Good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
You're part-timer today.
I'm a part-timer today.
We're going to see him for a while, or hear him. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM, and we're on the web, taylor-report.com. Today we're going to talk about the developing issue, I'm going to call it. There are crisis mongers in the world. They love crisis. And so they're trying to create a crisis over Burundi. That's my view of it. And so we're going to discuss this issue of whether or not AU, African Union troops, might be deployed, as is the wish of somebody in Europe. So we're talking about that. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to learn what has been going on with both. There's a Canadian military, Canadian mission, the defense minister. He's not called that, right? What's he called? Anyway, he's over
he's
there.
He's called the defense minister.
Ah, right? Good. Yeah. He is called that.
And he likes to walk around.
I got
around
one right. Yeah. And he's in Iraq. And so we'll be talking to Zafar Bengash about that. But also a very important development in Nigeria, where a mosque has been destroyed and there is serious tension in that country. And so we'll be talking to Zafar about that. But right now, I believe, we're joined by Lebanese Tazira. Are you there, sir?
Yes. Hi, Phil.
Hey, thanks for joining us. You're the man of the hour, in my opinion, because rather important doings in Burundi and associated with Burundi. I'm reading in Al Jazeera today that the government of Burundi has rejected the proposal and that African Union troops be sent to Burundi, and allegedly to help keep the peace or prevent an outbreak of ethnic violence, I think. So what do you know about that? Where is this coming from? How is it possible that the sovereign country, independent country, member of the United Nations, Burundi, with a parliament, which met today, by the way, and discussed this matter, is being told they have to allow the African Union troops to come into the country? Can you tell us what's the story? Where does this begin and what's going to happen?
Yeah, this announcement came as a shock because, first of all, the troubles are happening in a few neighborhoods in Bujumbura. So not even the whole country. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a few neighborhoods in Bujumbura.
So we have a neighborhood crisis.
It's actually the acts of terrorism. When you throw bombs, at markets, at restaurants and bars, those are terrorist acts. When you attack military camps, those are terrorist acts. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, The number of troops, 5,000, is even shocking how big it is for three neighborhoods. Because if you can remember, last year, the M23 in Congo, they displaced over 600,000 people. And the UN Force of Intervention Brigade was 3,000 men for the Kivus, which are bigger than Burundi. And so this number is a heavy number of troops when the government says they don't need them. Our government alone has over 7,000 troops outside the country on peace missions.
Yes, that's why very striking information. Incidentally, I should mention that Lebanese Tazira is himself a Burundian and knows wherever he speaks, as of course familiar with the various parties and organizations can tell, and therefore is quite qualified to be talking about this. It's very important that you have 7,000 troops in Somalia as peacekeepers.
Actually,
why not just bring them? If somebody thinks there's a problem, why don't they ask the Somali Burundian soldiers in Somalia to return home and keep the peace in one of the neighborhoods in Bujumbura?
Actually, we have troops in the most dangerous countries in Africa right now. We have 5,600 in Somalia. We have over 1,200 in Central Africa, where there's the Balaka and Anti-Balaka wars. We have 1,200 also in Mali, which was invaded by some terrorists a year ago. And so we have troops who are well-prepared, who are in the most dangerous hotspots in Africa, the first thing would have been to actually call our troops back.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So, in other words, this is an indictment of your constitutionally established government, where you have a parliament, which is functioning, and a government that's functioning. This is someone abroad has decided that they have some moral legal basis to interfere in the internal affairs of Burundi. Who do you think is most guilty of wanting to do such a provocative thing as propose 5,000 troops be sent?
Yeah, the Burundi government has called this an invasion and occupation force, because during the debate, which was by 14 member countries in the AU, last week, we should remember, there was a report from the biggest refugee agency in Rwanda that said that Rwanda has been recruiting and arming refugee youth from the Mahama camp. Even the U.S. government, the U.S. Foreign Affairs, House Foreign Affairs Committee, released a statement. I can read you one line. It says, President Kagame's move toward a third term, persisting human rights abuses, and Rwanda's recruitment and arming of refugees to sow strife in the tinderbox that is neighboring Burundi are damaging Rwanda's story. So basically, even the U.S. has condemned Rwanda for arming rebellion, but yet nothing was said about Rwanda's involvement in the debate. So that's actually
that's quite illegal. I mean, you know, Burundi is within its rights to take this matter to the Security Council, because one of the things that's most clear to me is that it's understood that refugees are not supposed to be permitted to have arms and to be within 40 miles. They actually have an international law says that they cannot be within 40 miles of the border in order to make it, you know, so that they don't engage in activity which could lead to larger wars.
Yeah, and I think that the government of Burundi should indeed take that step, because that's illegal. Refugees should be refugees. Refugees should not be involved in any armed conflict. And that this was not debated at all. So this force is being seen as an invasion force for some country, Belgium, who are intending on taking out Burundi.
The former colonial power of Burundi.
Yeah, Burundi is going
They've appointed themselves to be your uncle.
Yes. So what happens?
I didn't appoint them. I know that. They've appointed themselves.
Yes, and what happens with the AU is, one thing, the AU is mostly sponsored. The budget is paid by the EU.
Let's underline that. You just said the budget of the African Union is written by the European Union.
The large majority, yes.
So what Europe wants, I think the old rule about he who pays the piper probably still calls the tune.
Exactly. Here we call them, in the U.S., we call them lobbyists. You know, they have the lobby power, they have the money, and so AU, basically, whatever they want, the AU will do.
Yeah. Now, there is an important country, Tanzania. What do they think of this?
Today, their foreign minister actually said he rejected foreign troops into Burundi. If you look at the regional angles, Rwanda and Burundi are clearly not on good terms. I don't think they'll come back on good terms anytime soon. But Tanzania has shown to be our brother, same as Congo, same as Angola, and all those members of the Great Lakes region who are majority behind Nkurunziza. But you have the Belgium, who is hurting very much at us, at Burundi, decolonizing itself from them. And if you listen to comments from Louis Michel, who sits in the European Union Parliament, and he's the Belgian member, he said over the weekend on Saturday, in a meeting, he said he wished Nkurunziza had been killed during the failed coup d'etat. So it tells you how much this decolonization is hurting the Belgians.
Well,
and why they're being involved so much in trying to destabilize Burundi. I always tell people, Burundian people are not bad. Burundians are not bad. But it's those people outside who are sponsoring chaos that are the bad people.
Yes. This is Lebanese Tazira. And, you know, I'm very glad you made this point about Louis Michel. He's the former Deputy Prime Minister of Belgium. Now, he spoke, as you said, at a public meeting and did say those words. And he also said that he wanted to arm people who were fighting Nkurunziza. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, he did. He said
now,
that, yes.
You know, why don't they see if they can muster 5,000 people to arrest him? Isn't it because we're talking about a crisis, which seems, as I understand what you're saying, is an artificial crisis. They're talking about how they're alarmed, but it's a false alarm. And
you know,
people who yell fire, like Mr. Michel, are the ones who cause the crisis. And why isn't it hate speech for him, a public figure, speaking in Belgium, to talk about the death of an elected leader in the African country of Burundi? It should be a crime. And it qualifies as hate speech.
And you know what? It's arrogance. It's the way the colonial master thinks about his subject. Mm-hmm. That's a classic example. You don't listen to me, I should kill you. Mm-hmm. And so he said that's an official from the Belgium government, and it explains all the lobbying they're doing to destabilize Burundi through the EU, through the AU. Mm-hmm. And so Burundi is facing, they also have a media war against, you know, Belgium and France, against the president. The more you can paint him as a monster, then the better. They can rile other countries against them.
No, a project of demonization would appear to be in place. I want to make sure I ask you to clarify something, because I think our listeners need to know this, because behind this propaganda is a kind of story being developed, which suggests that this is an ethnic battle and that the Hutus are dominating Tutsis and they're about to harm them. But there are... I'll ask you, put it this way. Are there Tutsis in the government, and are there Tutsi organizations that are part of this parliament and government in Burundi?
There are 40% of the entire government.
40%?
40% of the entire government. So, for example, today, in the House, there's a Senate and there's a House. In the House, there's 60% Hutus, 40% Tutsis. And if you go to the Senate, it's 50%, 50%. Okay. And during the debate, every member would say their name and their ethnicity. Not a single one said there was going to be a genocide. They were baffled at what the international news agencies are saying.
Yeah, tell me that again. I'm sorry. You said not a one of them said what?
Not one single one said that there was a likelihood of a genocide.
Yeah.
In Burundi. Not a single...
And that's a Senate that is 50-50, half Hutu, half Tutsi.
Yeah.
And you say that when they stood up to speak, they identified themselves by ethnicity.
Yes. Every person who spoke had to say whether or not they're Hutu or Tutsi and give their point of view. And were united in denouncing what the international media are saying. What happens in Burundi is, like, the opposition cries genocide so that a foreign army can come and take out the president, because they'll say as a pretext that he's trying to commit a genocide.
Yeah. When you say opposition, I think you're talking about the illegal opposition, are you not?
Because
this is not being said in parliament.
Yeah. The one, you know, the funny thing is, this is the opposition who tried to take out the president in an illegal coup on May 13th, mm-hmm. and most of the coup plotters, surprise, found themselves in Belgium.
Uh-huh.
And from there,
welcome
they
in Belgium.
Organized themselves. Oh, easily. They found visas somehow into Belgium, and now they've organized themselves over there, and they're the ones who are always on the Belgium and French media talking, doing interviews, and talking about how a genocide is imminent. But when you talk to folks on the ground, they're like, which country are you talking about? Mm-hmm. They're surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, I should say along the way that there is a website, Burundi-24.com, where you are at least able to find in French and English the clearly stated position of the state of Burundi, but also analysis and information that you do not get, as you say, and with demonization. All reference, all citation of people who defend the government is reduced to a handful of words, which are mocked.
Yeah, I do go to that site, and that site, Burundi-24, it looks like a site where it's by Burundians themselves who could get analysis from different people, a lot of people who are on the ground, who express themselves, and that's a pretty good news source.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to add one thing.
Yes.
Is this week, the U.S. sanctioned someone called Alexis Nduhije. And this is big news because Alexis Nduhije is the right hand of Ambassador Samantha Power in Burundi.
So the right hand shot the left hand.
Yeah. She, I think I told you last week that he co-founded with him the huge radio station where the coup d'etat happened on May 13th.
It was in his It was his radio station where the coup leader announced that he had seized power. Is that right?
Yes. It was all pre-planned. It was all pre-planned. She has never condemned him.
Samantha's attempt to seize power. I like that.
And we've been saying for long that Samantha Power has some personal interest because she brought him here. She put him in the Time magazine one time of the 100 most influential people in the world. You know, and here he is now. I had warned last week that this this man is a warlord. He was named in a UN report in 2012 as being a brutal warlord in Congo. And now the U.S. itself last week put sanctions against him, saying that he has been training rebels and attempting to murder lots of officials in Bujumbura. He's behind most of the killings against government officials in Bujumbura.
While being her favorite
right-hand man.
While being her favorite human rights advocate and poor victim.
Exactly. And she has never condemned him.
It needs to be rescued by troops paid for by Belgium.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, another individual has popped up here, and I wonder, is there some sort of division in the within Burundi amongst some of these guys who once at one time were all together? His name is Buyoya, and the, France has decided to make him prominent again. He was once a type of leader in your country. Can you tell us who he is, and why is France so interested in interviewing him?
Okay, so, you know, I'm shocked he's allowed to even roam the streets. The capitals of the world. He's right now the head of the mission in Mali for the under the UN. He's a criminal. Before he killed Melchior Ndadaye in 1993.
And who is that? Could you tell us who Ndadaye is?
Melchior Ndadaye is the reason why there was a war for 15 years. He was the first elected president of Burundi, and Buyoya had lost against him. And basically, 3 months later, Buyoya's military took him out, killed him. But before that, in 1998, there were some massacres in Nhega and Marangara, which is two towns north eastern Burundi, where 25,000 villagers were killed. Even to prove his joy, he flew a helicopter at the end of the massacres and flew down there to congratulate his troops. For a job well done.
This is General Buyoya, right?
General Buyoya, yes.
Yes.
And
people often
forget. He's now hired by the UN.
Yes. And after the death of You lost two Hutu presidents, or two elected presidents. You lost the one in November 93, and then you lost the other in, who was in the plane with Habyarimana on April 6, 1994. So within 6 months, you lost two presidents. And then the man who took over was Mr. Buyoya, right?
Well,
or his friends.
What he did after, he put a puppet in power, but after a couple of years, he just took him out and went back into power. Mm-hmm. And again, there was no complaint from Belgium, no complaint from France. You know, that seems to be their guy. But Buyoya, he's a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he killed a head of state.
Well,
because the war that took 15 years, all because of his actions. And it's a shock to try and use him as an example against conflict.
Yeah, well, yes, he, by the way, is guilty, in my opinion, of a type of speech. They're always talking about hate speech and all that. But he is very prone to this, that kind of talk himself. When he ran for office and was defeated, I guess, by Dadai, he then was unhappy because the vote was about 70% to 30%, and he said that wasn't an election, that was a ethnic census. So so he's angry at the majority of people who rejected him, and he turns it into a racial matter. No one notices when Mr. Buyoya plays that kind of racial politics.
And also, there's some lines you have to catch as well. When people use the word genocide in Burundi, and then they talk about Rwanda, that's already racist. Racist or ethnic. Because they're not willing to talk about Burundi's own genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Burundi, the genocide, it's the Tutsis who killed the Hutus.
Mm-hmm.
In Rwanda, you have the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if they talk about Burundi's own genocide, they'll look bad because it will be the same Buyoya people repeating the same acts they did in the past. So to make Nkurunziza, who's Hutu, look bad, they try to talk about Rwanda's history and try to make us forget our own history. One thing in importance, well, when you talk about genocide, the army is 50% Hutu, 50% Tutsi. Also,
and that's the army that's defending the government today, and has also said that army says it will reject the entry into their country of the African Union outfit.
Yeah. Also, Nkurunziza, the president, he's half Hutu, half Tutsi. His father was killed in the 1972 genocide, and he was raised by his Tutsi mother.
Mm-hmm.
How would he even think about committing a genocide against Tutsis?
Yeah, we're talking. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm saying it's incomprehensible, this whole genocide drum.
Yeah. Now, isn't it, to go back, I mean, your portrayal of it, and incidentally, I think that any objective reader of the news would find your picture quite accurate, because you mentioned something again. This is a matter of neighborhoods within Bujumbura who are loyal to some political factions who decided to become violent outside the law and against the parliament and government of Burundi, which, in other words, it's a police issue. It's not it's nothing exotic. It's simply someone is prompting them, prodding them to act out in the hopes of foreign intervention. Is that right?
Yes, we find it very awkward that every time there's a terrorist act, Samantha Power and her crew, they call for negotiation. That only empowers the terrorists to keep committing terrorist acts so that they can get the foreign troops.
Yes, and by the way, if they wished to be political voices, they could join those others, both Hutu and Tutsi, who participate in the first of all, in the Arusha Accords, and now in the freestanding government of Burundi, which is 50% of the Senate is Tutsi. If these people in those neighborhoods are bent on a violent conflict, And to say anybody has to negotiate with, you don't have to negotiate with people who, as you say, are carrying out acts of terror.
No, you don't have to. They're terrorists. And even to make matters worse, the army has not really been involved. The police has been involved in this. If the army is not involved, you know, why bring in foreign troops? Because if the situation was so bad, the first thing we would do is call in the army to police the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but right now in Bujumbura, it's just the police alone that polices the street.
Mm-hmm.
The army are in the barracks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a surprise that the AU wants to bring in 5,000 troops when we have our own battalions, multiple battalions in the country, who are just in the barracks, you know, who are available to come in and intervene against acts of terror.
So
and it's surprising to me that in France, after the Bataclan, there was 125 people killed. Nobody called for foreign troops to come and, you know, intervene against the terrorists.
And,
you know, that was a terrorist issue.
Protect certain neighborhoods. By the way, every country experiences, you know, regional or violence within cities between various communities. That it tragically does happen in every country on the globe. And you have a stable government. You have an elected president, and you have a parliament. Entirely a false crisis.
You know, I live in Chicago, and the crime here is worse than Bujumbura. You know, there's more death so far this year in Chicago, a city of 3 million, than Bujumbura, a country of 10 million. Burundi, a country of 10 million.
Yeah. Well, you know, most Americans would say to you, yeah, but Chicago doesn't count. You know,
there's Cleveland, there's all the cities that have this crime issue. And the thing is, we're having a similar issue, but it's terrorism.
Sure.
And the government, if it needs help, will call for help to fight terrorism.
Yeah. Well, it's, again, this is Lebanese Tazira. And again, let's remind everyone, and by the way, this is an unfolding matter, but you say that Tanzania today has said they reject this idea of trying to impose 5,000 troops on Burundi and others. Isn't there an East African community, by the way, of which Tanzania would be one of the leaders? Have they decided or said anything?
You know, they had meetings in May during the conflict. And in the meetings, you have Tanzania on one side, you have Rwanda on the other side. So they cannot agree on anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in East Africa, the way it is, all five head of states have to agree to resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a majority solution.
Yeah. So at this moment, they're just speaking as individual states. And you say Tanzania has already spoken out. But you also believe, is it Angola and who else?
Well, Angola have always been partners of Burundi, the Congo, you know. But right now what's going on is Tanzania wants talks. Tanzania does not want violence. Tanzania actually is about to take over from Uganda from the mediation. Tanzania is historically...
Well, that would be more credible.
...the welcome talks.
Yeah,
and that's what Tanzania's stance is, you know. Let's push for talks before boots.
Mm-hmm. And also, Tanzania's leadership would be more credible because unlike the leader of Uganda, who's been there for 30 years, and he, you know, the system in Tanzania is more transparent, to put it kindly.
It's more democratic than Uganda by far. And that's the call for Tanzania, talk before boots. But I don't think the Belgians like that because talk eventually will keep Nkurunziza in power, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a government that, you know, that's stable, accepted by the region. And that's not something the Belgians want, clearly. With the whole aggressive movement in the EU. I mean, I can't count how many statements, the reports, they've put out against Burundi about how how evil the government is, how the genocide looming. I mean, it's too much. When you talk to people on the ground, they ask you, what country are you talking about?
Yes, exactly. You have to go to Burundi-24.com to actually hear Burundians like our guest, Lebeni Tazira, speak up. Mr. Tazira, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I think we're going to have to be talking to you again because this story is sitting right on the edge of a cliff like in one of those old movie serials. So we're going to have to – but you make me more confident. I have to say that. I don't think Tanzania wants to be a colony of Belgium, so I'm encouraged.
Yeah, right now it's frustrating when you read the media. It's all one way. Every coin has a flip side, and I'll give you the flip side.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. This is the Taylor Report, taylor-report.com, and we're on the Facebook / The Taylor Report. And you write to us, taylor@cat.fm. By the way, get busy and inform yourself. The stories in Africa tend to not get the kind of coverage they ought to. And when I say coverage, I mean where all sides are heard and basic facts are put in front of the reader, listener, viewer so that they can, for example, as Mr. Tazira just told us, half of the Senate of Burundi is Tutsi, 40% of its parliament, and also in 50% of the army. So we really have it's important to us not to buy into the hysteria, which seems to be mainly in Europe. And I would like to raise again, as I have done in other cases having to do with Africa, but specifically Rwanda in the past, people talk always about the atmosphere that creates violence and hate speech. I would suggest that if you want to look for hate speech towards leaders and people in Africa, go to the European Union and listen to what they're saying. Listen to characters like Bernard Henri Lévy, who wants to invade everybody, wants to kill everybody. He celebrated along with Hillary Clinton when Gaddafi was killed. He thought that was funny. But now they have such an anti-Semitic government, he's not even allowed back because his champions there have left so many bodies around and don't want him there. So we really have to – if you want to see the origins of anger and racism and danger and violence, go to the European Union, and that's where you'll find most of them.